Brought to you by the Cannabis Bee Network.
Here is the Cannabis Bee News with your host, Joe Jameson.
Hello, listeners. How's it going today? This is episode CBN 055, 9/17/2013. Let's roll into article number one, John McCain on marijuana. Maybe we should legalize. Take it away.
John McCain on marijuana, maybe we should legalize. By Paige Lavender. Source, The Huffington Post. Senator John McCain indicated he may be changing his stance on marijuana legalization during a town hall event in Arizona on Thursday. Arizona Daily Star columnist Tim Steller tweeted that McCain said maybe we should legalize during the Phoenix event. McCain isn't the first one in his family to show signs of support for marijuana legalization. His daughter Meghan McCain came out in favor of pot legalization, and admitted she'd smoked a joint, in June 2012. McCain didn't just address the topic of pot legalization during the town hall. He faced a tough crowd during the event while discussing the situation in Syria, with many in the crowd largely opposed to military action.
Article number 2. U.S. attorney says marijuana memo won't affect their anti-pot work. Take it away.
U.S. attorneys say marijuana memo won't affect their anti-pot work. By Jacob Salem. Source, Forbes. In my column last Friday, I cited reasons to doubt the Justice Department's newfound respect for state marijuana laws and particular, its forked-tongued record on medical marijuana. Tom Angel of Marijuana Majority notes several recent comments from U.S. attorneys that reinforce the case for skepticism. The gist of their reaction to Deputy Attorney General James Cole's August 29th memo, which was widely interpreted as a green light for legalization in Colorado and Washington, is that they plan to proceed pretty much as before. Here is what a spokeswoman for Melinda Hogg, the U.S. attorney for the Northern District of California, had to say, emphasis added here and later. The office is evaluating the new guidelines, and for the most part it appears that the cases that have been brought in this district are already in compliance with the guidelines. Therefore, we do not expect a significant change. That is pretty telling, since Hogg's crackdown on medical marijuana dispensaries has been one of the most aggressive in the country, featuring the closure of city-supported outlets in San Francisco and a forfeiture action aimed at shutting down Oakland's Harborside Health Center, the state's largest dispensary. In a February 2011 letter to Oakland's city attorney, Hogg declared, "We will enforce the Controlled Substances Act vigorously against individuals and organizations that participate in unlawful manufacturing and distribution activity involving marijuana, even if such activities are permitted under state law." Hogg has argued that Harborside's size makes it an appropriate target, saying it is not complying with California's law because it is a large-scale operation that processes millions of dollars worth of business. More generally, she says, the larger the operation, the greater the likelihood that there will be abuse of the state's medical marijuana laws and marijuana in the hands of individuals who do not have a demonstrated medical need. Yet California law allows collective cultivation by patients and caregivers, and it does not impose a limit on how many people can participate in such organizations. Furthermore, Cole's memo instructs U.S. attorneys that in exercising prosecutorial discretion, prosecutors should not consider the size or commercial nature of a marijuana operation alone as a proxy for assessing whether marijuana trafficking implicates the department's enforcement priorities. The statement from Hogg's office implies that she will continue doing just that. Michael Cotter, the U.S. attorney for Montana, likewise says the Cole memo would not have been an obstacle to his prosecutorial crusade against dispensaries, which included a case that threatened one co-owner with life in prison. "I don't think it would have changed how we conducted business," Cotter told the Associated Press. "I think we have to see how it evolves over time. It's not going to affect the way we do business here in Montana." Jenny Durkin, the U.S. attorney for the Western District of Montana, also sees no reason to change her approach to enforcing the federal ban on marijuana. "We have consistently focused on federal enforcement priorities in Western Washington, and have worked with our state and local partners to ensure the safety of our communities. That will not change. We will continue to enforce the Controlled Substances Act." While Durkin has been less aggressive in targeting dispensaries than Michael Ormsby, her counterpart in the Eastern District of Washington, in 2011 she co-signed a letter with him warning then-Governor Christine Gregoire that "we maintain the authority to enforce the Controlled Substances Act vigorously against individuals and organizations that participate in unlawful manufacturing and distribution activity involving marijuana, even if such activities are permitted under state law." The letter threatened to prosecute not only growers and sellers but also others who knowingly facilitate their actions, which Grégoire interpreted as a threat to state employees who license and regulate dispensaries. Grégoire cited that legal danger when she vetoed a bill that would have clarified the rules for supplying marijuana to patients. Dispensaries in California, Montana, and Washington operate in a legal gray area, since they are not licensed and regulated by the state. Hence Hogg, Cotter, and Durkin can always argue that the dispensaries they target are not really authorized by state law, although they also have made it clear that compliance with state law is not a shield against federal prosecution. Colorado, by contrast, has licensed and regulated, in theory, at least dispensaries since 2010. But that did not stop John Walsh, the U.S. attorney there, from targeting more than 50 of them for closure, based on the claim that they were too close to schools. Then again, Walsh has let hundreds of dispensaries throughout the state continue to operate, even though they are equally vulnerable to seizure and prosecution under federal law and even though shutting down the others required nothing more than threatening letters. So when his office says there's not going to be a substantial change in the wake of the Cole memo, that could be interpreted as good news. As Angel notes, activists such as Rob Campia of the Marijuana Policy Project have pointed out that it seems to be the case that federal prosecutors have largely not interfered in states that have robust regulatory systems to control the marijuana industry and that the harassment mostly seems to occur in states that do not have clear regulations in place, such as California, Montana, and Washington. Walsh's relatively light-handed approach may be the best example of regulation's value as a talisman against federal meddling, since a nascent cannabis industry has been openly operating in Colorado for years.
Article number 3. Survey. Baby boomers sharply increase their marijuana use. Take it away.
Survey. Baby boomers sharply increasing their marijuana use. By Jake Ellison. Source. Seattle PI. People 50 years old and up are apparently rediscovering marijuana at a pretty good clip, according to the latest survey by the National Survey on Drug Use and Health sponsored by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. From the top. In the survey, current or past month use of marijuana rose for people 12 years old and up. Marijuana was the most commonly used illicit drug. In 2012, there were 18.9 million past month users. Between 2007 and 2012, the rate of current use increased from 5.8 to 7.3%, and the number of users increased from 14.5 million to 18.9 million. Although comparing surveys from different organizations is risky, since it's pretty impossible to get an apples-to-apples comparison, another recent poll did find about the same numbers for current users. The most recent Gallup poll rounded the numbers off to 7% of those surveyed were current users. However, asked if they had ever used marijuana, not current or past month use, but ever, Gallup found that the trend for trying marijuana had pretty much plateaued over the past 30 years. Gallup wrote, "Even as Americans' support for legalizing marijuana has doubled, and more than 20 states have loosened marijuana restrictions in various ways, Gallup finds relatively little increase throughout the past three decades in the percentage of U.S. adults who say they have tried marijuana. But what about that spike you mentioned? A solid portion of the increase in current use or in the past month reported by the Federal Drug Survey comes from people 50 years old and up. For adults aged 50 to 54, the rate increased from 3.4% in 2002 to 7.2% in 2012. Among those aged 55 to 59, the rate of current illicit drug use increased from 1.9% in 2002 to 6.6% in 2012, the Federal Survey said. Among those aged 60 to 64, the rate increased from 1.1% in 2003 to 3.6% in 2012. These trends partially reflect the aging of members of the baby boom cohort, that is, persons born between 1946 and 1964, whose rates of illicit drug use have been higher than those of older cohorts. Gallup found the same trend. Widespread experimentation with marijuana first occurred among adults aged 18 to 29 between 1969 and 1973, rising from 8% to 35%. It then continued to mount, reaching 56% by 1977, and remained at that level in 1985. Since then, however, marijuana use among young adults has progressively declined. At the same time, as the bulge of young adults who tried marijuana in the 1970s ages and replaces older Americans who never tried it, the rate of all Americans who have ever tried the drug has increased slightly. You can see our elders picking up the joint a bit more visually in this graphic by the government. Most remarkably, you can see, people between the ages of 55 and 59 have the biggest increase of having used marijuana in the past year. A few more facts from the government data. Daily or almost daily use of marijuana used on 20 or more days in the past month increased from 5.1 million persons in 2007 to 7.6 million persons in 2012. The rate of current marijuana use among youths aged 12 to 17 decreased from 8.2% in 2002 to 6.7% in 2006, remained unchanged at 6.7% in 2007 and 2008, then increased to 7.9% in 2011. The rate declined to 7.2% in 2012. The rate of current use of illicit drugs among young adults aged 18 to 25 increased from 19.7% in 2008 to 21.3% in 2012, driven largely by an increase in marijuana use from 16.6% in 2008 to 18.7% in 2012.
Article number 4. Cheryl Schumann, Coming Home to Ohio. Take it away.
Cheryl Schumann, Coming Home to Ohio. By Mary Jane Borden. Source, The Compassion Chronicles. The Ohio Rights Group is delighted to announce that the famed Cheryl Schumann, who was just awarded the 2013 Most Outstanding Activist of the Year Award at the Seattle Hemp Fest, will be returning to her home state of Ohio to help pass the Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment. Cheryl may be one of the most visible women in the medical cannabis reform movement. Coined the Martha Stewart of marijuana, she has built the largest cannabis media source in the world, producing content for such outlets as CNN, Piers Morgan Live, Katie Couric Show, The View, Good Morning America, Fox Business News and many other international media outlets, taking them from $150,000 in just gross revenues when she started to more than $6.5 million in revenue within 18 months. Cheryl and her daughter Amy have set ratings records by reaching over 100 million mainstream viewers. Cheryl is no stranger to the camera. Born in Portsmouth, Ohio, she made her first television appearance at the age of 3 as the focus of Christmas in Appalachia with Charles Kuralt. The series profiled the vast differences between the rich and poor throughout America. Her first big chance to shine came at age 17 when she created a coupon refunding system. After her hometown newspaper published an article entitled, America's Coupon Queen Buys $167 Worth of Groceries for 16 cents. The AP and UPI Wire Services, Star Magazine and other media outlets picked up the story. Overnight, Cheryl became a huge sensation. The Bob Brown Show at WLWT-TV in Cincinnati offered her a twice-weekly appearance to share her money-saving tips. Group W Productions followed with a national thrice-weekly segment on its number one-rated syndicated show, PM Magazine. A life-changing car accident at the age of 23 forced Cheryl to reassess her life path. She relocated to California to work as an optician and, by offering to make a simple house call, became the personal optician to Michael Jackson. That call led to a new business named Starry Eyes, which within 3 years, accrued revenues of $22 million. Starry Eyes placed her on the biggest film, TV and music properties in Hollywood, where her A-list clients grew to include Tom Cruise, Julia Roberts, Johnny Depp, Steven Tyler and Jennifer Lopez. Her expertise led to regular appearances on The Today Show, Access Hollywood and Entertainment Tonight. In 2006, tragedy struck again. Cheryl was diagnosed with cancer. After years of unsuccessful and painful surgeries, chemotherapy and radiation, she opted for endocannabinoid medicine as an alternative and used the raw juice and oils from the medical cannabis plant to save her life. The publicity generated from her personal battle led to her appointment as the executive director for Beverly Hills Cannabis Club. In the process, she learned how to grow her own medicine on her California farm. Most recently, Cheryl and her daughter Amy flew to Tel Aviv to tour Tikkun Olam, Israel's largest supplier of medical cannabis. The organization has developed a unique treatment mode that views cannabis as a central part of patient care. The two celebrities visited Tikkun Olam's greenhouses and met with their highly respected team of researchers, scientists and oncologists. Cheryl also made the cover of Israel's top read news publication. Cheryl is coming home to Ohio. After reaching out to her in July after her appearance on The View, ORG President John Party invited her to join the campaign to pass the Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment in her home state. Several conference calls later, her involvement was confirmed. A number of events are in the works to showcase both Cheryl's story and the OCRA. Her celebrity, business acumen and experience as a patient combined to make her a powerful voice for the cannabis movement in Ohio. As she so poignantly stated, I'm coming home to see my parents, but because I'm a medical cannabis patient in a still illegal state, my life and health are at risk if I stay. The Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment gives me a chance to change that. We agree, Cheryl. Welcome home. Mary Jane Borden. Mjborgh at ohiorights.org. 614-300-0529. Ohio Rights Group. 1021 East Broad Street. Columbus, Ohio, 43205. www.ohiorights.org. www.facebook.com/weblink.
Article number 5. Hemp flag to be flown at Vermont State House on Constitution Day. Take it away.
Hemp flag to be flown at Vermont State House on Constitution Day. By Molly Riley. The Huffington Post. A flag made from hemp will be flown at the Vermont State House to honor Constitution Day, the Associated Press reports. On Tuesday, rural Vermont will host a reception at the state capitol to raise a flag stitched from hemp fibers, drawing attention to the state's new rules governing hemp growth. The new legislation, passed by Vermont lawmakers earlier this year, removes barriers to hemp production in the state. Vermont joins 8 other states with similar legislation on the books. Vermont's rules currently stand at odds with federal policy. Although hemp fabric can be imported, federal law places restrictions on hemp cultivation in the United States, due to the plant's trace amounts of THC, the psychoactive ingredient found in marijuana. While industrial hemp contains an extremely low concentration of tetrahydrocannabinol THC, the Drug Enforcement Agency makes no distinction between recreational marijuana and its non-psychoactive cousin. All cannabis plants are classified as Schedule I substances. Under Vermont policy, farmers who want to grow the plant must register with the state and maintain tetrahydrocannabinol THC levels below 0.3%. Vermont farmers are ready to lead the nation, and considering the U.S. Justice Department's recent marijuana ruling, many legal experts believe that the states have been given the green light in allowing hemp cultivation as their laws allow, rural Vermont's Rob Kidd said in a statement regarding Tuesday's flag event. The same flag set to fly in Montpelier flew over the United States Capitol on July 4th and over the Colorado State House on August 1st. According to the Washington Post, Colorado farmer and hemp advocate Michael Bowman gave the flag to Republican Jared Polis DiColo, who led the charge to get the flag flown over the U.S. Capitol. "It's a powerful symbol," Bowman told the Post, noting that Betsy Ross' original stars and stripes were also made from hemp.
Article number 6. Baseball is perfect for puffing pot. Take it away.
Baseball is perfect for puffing pot. By Matt Murnau. Source: Cannabis Culture. Dodgers slugger Juan Uribe's career milestone of 3 homers in 1 game was overlooked by a mysterious marijuana hat. Uribe was holding court with the LA press about his amazing game, but it wasn't until the news clips aired that People Not Sports writer spotted a weed leaf hat in his locker. None of LA finest sports reporters bothered to question the choice of headgear because they were too focused on their story of Uribe's 3-homer game. Sports reporters who aren't the most talented in the newsroom thought they knew what the story was, a 3-homer game, but now there's questions regarding Uribe's hat. Did a teammate plant it in his locker, or is Uribe on Team Green in the Magic Johnson-owned LA Dodgers? All I know is when I play MLB 13 the show, I perform incredibly better the more I session during the game because baseball is about concentration. A good sativa/indica hybrid is important because you don't want heavy lidded eyes. You need to be relaxed and to be able to focus. There's some great cannabis strains for baseball playing. Matt Murnau, a left-handed pitcher who throws 98 mph fastball and devastating 92 mph sinker, has a much better game the more medicated I am. Marijuana Smoker's Guidebook has marijuana reviews where I actually mention my video gaming improved immensely. Video game baseball is slow, which allows for plenty of toking. When I'm getting roughed up on the mound, I'll smoke more marijuana to regain my focus. MLB 13 is not real, but when I'm buzzing and focused, it's real enough for me. I'm not saying Uribe had just smoked a joint or a 3 before his 3-home-run game, but what if the hat was a sly stoner wink-wink-nudge-nudge that he did? Maybe Uribe wanted to say to the sports reporters gathered around his locker, "I smoked a joint of really amazing Girl Scout cookies and saw the ball really well. I was 100% relaxed in the batter box tonight and my arms felt they were a mile long. The Girl Scout cookies really helped my swing, which made the ball explode off the bat." What Juan Uribe would say if marijuana was legal. Fascinatingly, the farthest point from home plate to deep center field at the stadium the Dodgers play at is 420 feet. Is this some kind of cannabis coincidence? No, there are several stadiums in baseball with the legendary 420 displayed in their outfields. Detroit Tigers' Comerica Park, Cleveland Indians and Boston Red Sox Stadium have 420 listed on their outfield walls too. Fenway Park, where the Red Sox play, also has a green monster. I think it's time to move Toronto's sky, though I refuse to call it the Rogers Centre walls back to 420 feet mark. During one game I went 5 innings straight before an usher asked me very politely to not vaporizer during the game. I was amiable because a small cloud of cannabis smoke was languishing in the air. With plenty of baseball players testing positive for all kinds of weird hormone-enhancing drugs, which has put a black mark on their game not the game, it's great to see a pot leaf in the locker room. Marijuana is a performance-enhancing drug when used correctly, but it's not going to end an early death.
All right, that's all I have for this episode. Till next episode, y'all have a good day, good night, good week. Bye-bye.
We pollinated your mind. Now, go pollinate the world.